Accession number 32303, Rule 3.
Wing Commander Vines, OBE. You say here, the reason for his award of OBE, you were never told, but he certainly didn't shine in any way as a responsible POW officer. He tried to stay very much in the background and took no part in matters of camp organisation and running. There was a story current at the time that he was so on tenterhooks when taking Tenko with a company that he got his commands all muddled, leaving his men in sixes and sevens, and their Japs furious. You tried to illustrate the incident in the drawing by showing the men on parade with their heads screwed round and facing backwards. The tree is the ubiquitous Casuarina, which lined the Padang in HBS.
Padang, it's pronounced.
Padang.
Padang, yes.
So the emphasis is on the...
On pad.
Padang. The Dano camp, December 1942 to January 1943. So you weren't there very long.
No. It was a short stay.
And here we have Flight Lieutenant Sangster. Old Sang managed to escape from Hong Kong and Singapore, only to be incarcerated in Java. Seems rather bad luck, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Not in good physical shape, suffering painful arthritic condition, complicated by extensive tropical ulcers on his feet. Being well over 40 years of age, he would have gone to Bandung with the Brass Hats when the slave drafts were formed for the Moluccas. And you say you hope he survived. Sounds like he had a rather tough time of it.
Yeah.
Wing Commander Walker. A rather peppery gentleman who busied himself with camp affairs in the Dano. Pilot Officer White. A businessman from Hull in civilian life. Yarmart. Camp Surabaya, January to March 1943. Wing Commander R. Davis, RAF. A dishy young regular officer who must have been very efficient to have risen to the rank of Wing Commander at such an apparently early age. I took him to be in his very early 30s, you say. Despite his lounge lizard appearance, indeed, and comportment, he was in fact a man of considerable strength of character. And although you saw next to nothing of him in action, you heard later he'd made a first-class camp commander who stood up to and took no nonsense from the Nips. Somebody of quality. Flight Lieutenant Dutch Holland. A flying type. Sounds like rather a vain man, from what you write. Aggie Owen,
yes. There he is.
There he is.
I had contact with him after the war.
Oh, yes.
Briefly. Forgotten why I contacted him. I wanted to ask him some sort of question.
You say he commanded 19th Company on the camp. Background shows one of the long bamboo and palm frond atap huts, which formed the main accommodation for the prisoners. And they were typical all over the Far East, that construction,
wasn't it?
Made from local materials and easy to put up. Now we have Flight Lieutenant J.C. Joe Hutton. Big framed young man, relatively laid back approach to life. Flying Officer Chalk, another regular, rather effeminate manners and style of dressing. You have such a gift with pen and ink. Wing Commander Welsh, commander of British group of prisoners in the last days of Yarmarkt. Not a very forceful man and little influence with the Japanese. The background of this illustration shows the largest permanent building in the camp, the main exhibition hall of the annual trade fair, and housed Japanese administration on the left, and some of the luckier of the Dutch internees who had been there from the start on the right. It also housed a Dutch organisation called Camp Fleur, set up to organise amenities for prisoners. Pilot Officer Bill Altsen. Do you recall him? Do you remember?
Yes, clearly.
Now, you tell me something of the background of this one. It's extremely busy.
Well, this was a sort of a little lean-to of the main hut, which was the hospital. And this was set up as a little laboratory for myself and Olsen to work in, to produce yeast.
Right.
And this was the first experimental production of yeast to feed directly to people in the hospital.
Right.
Not for the general camp distribution. No. But we were only in operation for a short time when we were sent out to the Moluccas.
But presumably all this work you were doing earlier on really informed what you were able to do later.
Yes.
You've done a lot of the groundwork experimentation, had you there?
Well, yes and no. Right. Yes and no. Because the conditions were so different. Yeah.
I mean, it really does have the look of a laboratory about it.
Oh, yes.
Quite a setup.
It was set up as a lab. I mean, we had all the basic facilities for growing yeast. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You say here, when the formation of the Molucca slave drafts put a stop to our yeast production, Bill, as an older man, went with the senior officers to Bandung, taking the pure culture of the yeast with him. And then you describe the background, as you've just done, of the hut and how it was fitted out. Heruku Camp, March 1943 to August 1944. Heruku being in the Spice Islands.
Yep, that's right.
Is it an island next to Ambon? In proximity to?
Well, fairly near. I think it was about 15 miles
right
from Ambon to Heruku.
So you've got a series of caricatures on this page.
That's right.
Of different characters. Can you tell me anything about any of those? You've got names, let's see, Bardsley, De Vissa, Breuers.
They're all up here at the top. And they're all Dutch, I think.
Okay.
Here was in one camp out in Heruku.
Yes.
The Japanese issued tickets, little pink slips, which they gave to everybody who went out on the working party. Every time they went out on a working party, they were given this little pink slip. And with that little pink slip, they could buy things in the camp.
There was a shop.
And a shop. Mm-hmm. And here's the shop with the sort of hole through which you made the payments. And here are the tickets all on the floor.
Oh. And it was Pilot Officer Corbett and Flying Officer Tony Hobson depicted there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Without a ticket, no purchase could be made.
That's right.
And then bottom right, it looks like Captain Maas, CEO of one of the Dutch companies.
What is it?
Maas or Mace?
Maas.
Maas.
Yeah.
And Squadron Leader Desmond Hopkins.
That's right. He died.
Really?
And do you know what he died of?
No.
Well, a kind of broken heart, I suppose.
Really?
No, the story about him is that just before he was captured, he wrote a letter to his wife, more or less accusing her of being unfaithful. And before he could get a reply or any kind of response, he went into the bag. In other words, a prisoner of war.
Right.
And this preyed on his mind and eventually killed him. He actually finally gave up I don't know whether that's down there.
You did put this here, yes. Yeah. You say he was deputy British camp commander.
Yeah.
And he virtually stopped eating about July 1944, finally died on the small ship you commanded on the way back to Java on September the 3rd, 1944.
Oh, gosh, yes, I forgot that. I buried him.
Yes.
I buried him, yeah.
What was the... Do you remember the name of the ship that you commanded?
Oh, no.
No? Was it one of these transports you were being moved around and you were the senior officer?
Yes, this was a... gosh, I don't...
It'll be in your book, I'm sure.
Yes, it'll be there, yeah.
I'll look that up. Thanks for explaining that, Leslie. 8 more British officers on this one. These are beautifully done. The colour is absolutely fantastic. You say here, I'll comment only on 4 of these officers. The top 3, Pilot Officer Cranford.
That's this one.
Okay, very tall. Pilot Officer Jordan.
Jordan, one in the middle.
And Flight Lieutenant Blackwood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Journalist. A newsman. Journalist, yeah.
And they were very close friends.
Yeah, very close friends.
They regarded themselves as macho and were the 3 who, you were told later by your supportive medical officer friends, who regarded your yeast-growing activities as a special kind of malingering, an attempt to avoid hassle and beatings from the Japs. But working in the cookhouse was no sinecure, and we were certainly not immune from hassle and beatings by the Korean guards. Later, Blackwood went out of his way to become one of the chief witnesses in the war crimes trials held in the Far East.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Pilot Officer Dennis Mason. Now the works and bricks.
That's one.
Yes. And these are all people in Heruku.
That's right, yeah.
He was the brains behind the complete reconstruction of the Heruku camp that was brought about by Sergeant Gunzo Mori.
Gunzo Mori, yeah.
When the dysentery epidemic on Heruku had run its course with over 300 dead, and after the arrival of 900 or so relatively fit Dutchmen from Amahi and on Surat.
Amahai.
Thank you. Amahai. Mason survived and on his return home formed a very successful building firm. Five of the Heruku doctors. Dr. Bunning.
Bunning, yeah.
Is this a Dutch name?
Yeah.
Right. Dr. Rudy Springer.
Springer, there we are.
Dutch surgeon.
Yeah.
Flight Lieutenant Alistair Forbes.
That's him here.
Tough little red-haired Scot.
That's right.
Who was the last medical man to return to Java after the terrible experiences of the Moluccas drafts. He worked continuously and courageously with the sick and the dying for well over 2 years and didn't get back with the few remaining survivors until just before the Japanese capitulation. He survived and returned to general practice in Aberdeen. Flight Lieutenant Phillips.
That's him, on the bottom, yeah.
A gifted and skilled surgeon, a naturalist, a well-known bird photographer, a splendid watercolourist, a skilled craftsman in the construction of makeshift artificial limbs for prisoners. He was the overworked doctor on one of the returning ships, which took over 2 months to make the normally 5-day journey back to Java, and on which 300 out of the 600 prisoners died from starvation and disease. He too survived to return to medicine.
Yeah,
Lieutenant Tromp.
Tromp, here we are.
A young Dutch officer who saved your life.
Yeah,
when
that's
he
right.
gave you.
He did, yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. He brought me medicine. I had dysentery. I went down with the normal dysentery, of which people died right left and centre on Heruku. I don't know why I give the figures there at all, but certainly...
Not in this, no.
No. And Forbes, I think it was Forbes, Yeah. Brought me food.
Tromp. Lieutenant Tromp.
Tromp, there you are.
Yes, this one, the Dutch.
Brought me food in Heruku, the hospital of Heruku.
Hmm.
And I think that definitely saved my life.
You say a shot of sulfur drug.
Yeah, that's right.
That must have been very important.
These sulfur drugs were the early drugs of its kind.
And now you go on to another set of caricatures, all on one page, and these are your Dutch helpers, yeast growing setup.
Oh yes, that's right.
Dr.
Yeah.
Teng Ten Houten.
Ten Houten, yeah.
Houten, thank you.
This one here.
He was your right hand man.
That's right.
Now, what's that? Is that a fight pathologist?
Psychologist?
No, fight or
phytologist.
Fight pathologist.
How do you spell it?
And you've written here P H Y T P and then the word pathologist.
Phytopathologist. Yeah.
Plant disease specialist. Working in the Rosella fibre industry.
Who's this?
This is Teng Ten.
Ten Houten.
Ten Houten. When the Japanese invaded. He survived to become director of the Government Phytopathological Institute
in Wageningen.
Uh-huh. And later a professor in the university there.
Yeah, that's right.
Lieutenant Papenrecht.
Papenrecht?
This one here?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he is. He was a pharmacist.
Right.
Yeah.
And he'd managed to bring with him chemicals and a microscope.
That's right.
Onto Heruku. That must have been quite an achievement.
That's right, yeah.
Jan Voordig. Is it Voordig, this one? Colourful character, handsome and athletic, who'd been an international fencer before the war.
That's right, yeah.
Dr. Yes. Hollander.
Dr. Hollander, where is he? Down here, I think. Isn't that Hollander?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Doctor allocated the small draft of 300 men who travelled back to Java on the small ship with you. He's the only one in the group who's not associated with yeast growing.
Yeah.
This is absolutely fascinating.
Yes, that's
the British helpers yeast growing setup.
Oh, yeah.
There's a colourful bunch.
That's right.
Corporal Bob Moore, chief stoker of wood fires.
Here we are, that one.
Golly, he's got quite a defined face.
Yes.
Petty Officer Tunnicliffe.
That's right, this chap here.
Head of the cookhouse, of which the yeast business formed a political part.
Yep.
Tunnicliffe died on January the 25th, 1944, in the Liang camp on Amboina.
Good Lord.
On the way back to Java.
Mm-hmm.
Corporal Charlie Ward.
Charlie Ward, down here somewhere. Where are we?
This one. Red
Hair? Yes, that's right. Red Charlie Hair? Ward, yeah.
Radio mechanic in 512.
That's right.
COL. Is that COL?
That was the unit, the radar unit I commanded.
Right.
512 COL.
Thank you. Then we come on to making tempe.
That's right. Oh, yeah, good old tempe, yeah. Have you ever eaten it?
No. What
very
is it?
Good.
What is it like?
Very, very strange. An acquired habit, I suppose. This is soybean, which is, first of all, shelled. Take the skin off. And then boiled and dried in the sun, and then fried. And a very, very rich source of proteins.
Right. So you've got here Sergeant Hoffman.
Yeah, here we are. That one, I think, is it?
Windelband.
Windelband?
Band.
Yeah, that must be that one.
Preparing an inoculum powder by pounding dried
right.
tempe.
That's right.
And Corporal Sims and A.C. Willen.
Here you are.
Stamping steamed beans in sacks.
That's right.
In the river to remove the seed coats preparatory to fermentation.
Yeah.
Flying Lieutenant Roy Fitch, RAFVR.
There he is. Very fine, his body. Ha ha.
You say here, Roy was very body conscious and spent most of his life in captivity suntanning himself.
That's true.
And Pilot Officer Lockwood.
Yeah.
One of the pilots who came late to Singapore to fly Hurricanes, he kept quite remarkably fit despite disease and privations. You see him here carrying one of two stinking sun-dried fish that were very occasionally to be bought in the camp shop, surrounded by flies. You put giving some indication of how high they were. Back in Java, Army Barracks Camp Bandung, spring 1945. This section of drawings now look to be, some of them anyway, in black and white. Makan, food.
Makan, yeah. Makan is food.
In Dutch.
Yeah.
Or in Dutch.
No. In Malay.
Yes. Yeah. Makan is food. And in Dutch it is eten halen.
Eten halen means come and collect your
food.
Your eats.
Very good. You've got a group of people there. Tempe factory.
That's right.
A particular friend of yours was Pete Roelofsen.
Roelofsen, yeah.
Which is this one here.
Yeah, that's right. He became professor of agricultural botany, I think it was called, in Wageningen, in Holland.
In the University of Delft.
Delft.
He was one of the pioneers in research on the electron microscope study of the structure of plant cell walls.
Yeah, yeah.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
Flying Officer Abercrombie, another of the Australian technical officers, sent to Rimu just before the Japanese attack. He acquired the nickname Abbo because of the somewhat aboriginal
physiognomy.
Thank you. He survived, but you lost contact with him. Yes, he does have a...
Yeah.
I can understand that. Lieutenant Collings.
Yeah.
Anthropologist.
That's right.
At Raffles Museum in Singapore.
Yeah.